97.5 The Fanatic.
All right, welcome back. Joe Stazak here. It's 10:01 at 97.5 The Fanatic. I'm here till noon today. D-line them from noon to 4. Pat Egan from 4 to 8. Don't know what they'll be discussing, but right now we're discussing the George Floyd situation as pertains to Colin Kaepernick and one Carson Wentz. He and his boy, his best friend on the team, Zach Ertz, came out and spoke out the other night on Twitter against the social injustice and the rioting and the tragedy that was the George Floyd situation. The question I have today is, do you think athletes, because I'm glad I'm seeing it. Now, again, where were the, my thing is, where were they when the whole Colin Kaepernick thing was going on? Why didn't they kneel? Why didn't they stand with Malcolm Jenkins? It's for a good cause. What's the problem? But again, never too late to do the right thing, I always say. So they're coming out now. I think it'll help his leadership skills. It will help him in the locker room because it's predominantly a black locker room. And you have your white leader speaking out on social inequality and police brutality and institutional racism, as Carson Wentz calls it. So my question is, because he's got a big forum, he's a celebrity, a high-end celebrity, a quarterback in the National Football League. There's only 32 of them, at least starting quarterbacks, and there's only about 12 good ones. He has certainly a forum to do a lot of things, to get a lot of things done. This was the first time he really came out and took a side on anything controversial. Some other players are doing that now. Again, Zach Ertz, J.J. Watt did it, which I like to see. I like to see the white guys come out and have some things to say and really back what Colin Kaepernick was behind a few years ago and to really denounce what's going on and to denounce the police brutality and the senseless murdering of innocent people. I like to see that. Now, Charles Barkley used to say, well, he's not a role model. And just because he's a basketball player, he shouldn't be deemed as a role model. Well, I think, like it or not, Charles, you are a role model. Awesome guy, by the way. He comes in here once a year in the summer with Mike Miss. He's a tremendous guy, just as cooler than he is even on the air. He's just as real as could be. But I do think he's a role model. As do I think these players are role models, and I think they have a responsibility to speak out on certain subjects in order to help progress the cause. Now, Tony Dungy was asked on a Mike Tirico show, that lunch show that Mike Tirico does on NBC, he was asked this week if athletes have a responsibility to speak out on subjects like this one.
I think we do have a responsibility. I know when I came to the Steelers, Mr. Rooney, our owner, he talked about not just playing football for the Steelers, but being part of the community. And being part of the community means stepping up at times when we need it. Yes, it means community service, but sometimes it can be speaking up and saying, you know what, people, we need to stay calm, we need to stay peaceful, but leadership, we need to listen. We need to listen to these voices. I saw a tweet from Zach Ertz. I saw one from Carson Wentz. I've seen one from J.J. Watt.
Yes.
Guys saying, mm-hmm. Hey, we have a voice. And that's awesome. You applaud that. That's what these guys, to me, Mike, were doing. We did a piece on Kenny Stills and Mike Thomas in Miami. And they were responding to something that happened in Minneapolis. Kenny Stills has ties to Minneapolis. Philando Castile was shot by a police officer 4 years ago. And that was part of what they wanted to get across. And that's what they told us on our show. Hey, we need to be a voice for those who may not have as strong a voice as we do. And I think that's very appropriate for our sports figures.
Yeah, they have bigger voices than the rest of us. Now, I happen to have a microphone with 50,000 watts behind it, so I'm not quite in the position that they're in, but I have an opportunity twice a week, maybe more, to speak my opinion and to get it out there and to maybe try to progress some cause that I'm behind. So, And I feel at times I have an obligation to do so. If there's a situation where if I can reach one person, two people with a certain cause or something I'm supporting or behind, I think I have a responsibility to do so. I also have a responsibility to not incite riots. You know, these guys, these bosses here, they for some reason they trust me. They're like, here's a microphone. We probably won't even listen because it's a weekend. Just don't screw up or say anything racist or sexist or curse on the air. That's all we ask. So I try to stick to those guidelines. Let's go back out to the phone lines, Rich in Downingtown. But I do believe that these celebrities, which they are, and their role models, have a responsibility to speak out. They've been given the opportunity to reach a large number of people. And when topics like this come up, I think they have a duty to do so. Rich in Downingtown, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, Rich?
Hey, good morning. Yes, I just had one little addition about Colin Kaepernick. Yeah. when he first started, he didn't start by kneeling. If you remember, he sat on a bench. He was like pouting, and he sat on a bench during the anthem. And then he got a lot of criticism, like, you know, hey, you know, it's a national anthem. Everybody stands. Why are you sitting? And then he knelt because he felt that would be a way that he could show respect to the flag, and then but still also make a statement.
Interesting. I was not aware because I was reading something today that said the first time he did it, he knelt, but maybe they meant he sat. Because I think you're right. Now that I think back on it, I think he did sit the first couple times.
Yeah. And I think the caller that said, you know, he had been benched, he was kind of sitting out of a pout. You know, I think once they said, well, you're disrespecting the flag, then he was quick enough with his wits to say, you know what? Yeah, that's a good angle. Now, that's my personal opinion. Maybe other callers feel the same way, but he absolutely did sit, and it was, you know, he had been benched. So I think he was a little bit, you know.
Yeah,
anyway.
Could have been a little of both. You're right.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, listen, you're a fair guy, and I enjoy listening.
Well, I appreciate it, Rich. Thank you very much. Have a great day, my friend. James in Philly on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, James?
Yeah, I agree with the last caller that when Kaepernick first started, it didn't seem like it was about anything more than he was upset that he was on that bench. As far as the issues that have arisen since, they are real issues. But we have to look at it both ways. You know, I mean, you can't. I mean, the police. You can't throw piss and spit on the police. You know, I mean, these riots. It can't be said that well, people are mad and that's okay. Because you can't do it to anybody else. I mean, if somebody didn't like your broadcast, and I'm not trying to put your broadcast in the same line of what's going on to the African-American community. By the way, I am an African-American male.
Okay.
You know, but you can't disrespect other people to show how upset you are with being disrespected, especially at certain levels. Yeah, you can protest, yeah, you can speak, you can gather, but throwing stuff at the police and spitting on the police. It's not even the police that did the action that you're upset about.
Right, right. You know what I mean? You're lumping them in chaos. Because they wear the same uniform.
Chaos.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's chaos. That's all I wanted to say.
Yeah. Well, James, I appreciate it, pal. We got less coming up, so I got to let you go. But thank you for your opinion. The thing that's disturbing, and I mentioned this yesterday, is that, you know, I did a lot of, you know, searching the net to watch as many reports on this as I could. And several of them, the reporter was speaking to these small business owners about their stores being looted as they were speaking to the reporter, and they were predominantly black. So you have a lot of folks out there, a lot of black folks out there rioting and looting and damaging and pillaging small businesses and stores and lighting them on fire and stealing. You're doing that from your own, which to me was always senseless. Stealing and looting, that has nothing to do with protest. That's just, you know, you're out of control. All right, you're out of control. That has to end. But it was done to a lot of folks who happen to be black. I thought that was disturbing. Not that it would have been better if they were white, but I'm thinking, like, what do you... Is this just mob mentality? Is this just idiocy? Is this just, you know, because you're burning down your own town And you're basically, it's almost a self-fulfilling prophecy. You're kind of feeding into, because you're going to hear the other side, you know, I don't want to, I got to be careful about some words I use, but the other side will say, see, this is how certain people act, and this is why we have to be tough, and we have to blah, 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 blah. It kind of feeds into the reputation that sometimes they are bestowed upon them. Hey, without further ado, he's on the Comcast Business Hotline, Beyond Fast. My man used to do hockey with him. Now he does the Philadelphia Eagles and has done so for a while. He works for the Philadelphia Inquirer. He is the great Les Bowen. Hello, Les. How are you, my friend?
Just great, Joe. How are you?
I'm great. I appreciate you coming on. I read your article yesterday, and I wanted to talk to you about it. Because you focused on, before we get going, let me just ask you this, because I've asked several guests this very question. My head wanted to explode and wants to explode every time I see that video. What does it do to you watching that video of George Floyd? Is Les there? What happened to Les? Here, I thought he didn't like my question. He wasn't answering. Should we try Les? Should Les try back? Did I do something? Les, you there? Les? All right, you want to try him again? All right. All right, well, that was Les for about 12 seconds. You heard Les Bowen of the Philadelphia Inquirer. We'll get him back. My question to Les was, what did it do to you? How did it make you feel? To me, it just, again, I can't watch it without my blood boiling. The injustice. I'm a big justice advocate. It says it right there on my Twitter page. Justice advocate. I've been the victim of injustices before. I won't get into them. But I don't get what it's like to be a minority, and I never will. So I can't, you know, totally speak out to what that is like. I will never experience that. My children will never experience that. I will never have to have a talk with my children about being careful and this is how it actually is, not how it should be. And Les Bowen is back on the Comcast Business Hotline. Hello, Les. How are you, my friend?
Yeah, sorry there, Joe. Your head was exploding, and then I didn't hear anything.
Sorry, buddy. Probably on our end. My question was just like, what emotions does that video bring out in you when you watch it? Well, how do you feel?
Just sick. It's just, I can't imagine. I've never been a police officer, obviously, sure. But kneeling on the guy for nearly 9 minutes, what's so bad? He wasn't like thrashing around or, you know, there wasn't any sort of struggle. It seems senseless to me.
Yeah,
he's like walking down the street or something. Hey, kneeling on a guy's neck.
Les, I'm sorry to interrupt. You're dropping in and out. Can we try you one more time? I'm going to hang up, and he's going to call you right back. Okay?
Yeah. Tell him. I'll give him my landline number. How about that?
Okay. I'll put you on hold. He'll grab your landline. Thanks, Les.
Okay.
Thanks, bud. All right, I put him on hold. Did I do that correctly? I didn't whack him. All right. I'm interested to hear what Les had to say. We're having some technical issue, difficulty, so apologize for that. But I want to get into also the responsibility of our athletes. And, you know, sports is coming back soon. Even though they're not playing, they still have a forum. They still, you know, someone will be happy to put a microphone in front of them, or they will go to Twitter. But they have a big audience out there. Like it or not, I think they have a responsibility to speak out and speak out in support of this situation, which I think they should have done a few years ago. I was disappointed that that did not happen and that Colin Kaepernick did not get more support league-wide. I mean, it was split. There was, you know, it was fractured. He did gain, you know, a good amount of support, but I think the fact that then the owners turned on him and just some of the things, the new rules that were put into place about kneeling and not coming out of the locker room and whatnot, and I thought the job was executed to a fair thee well. His goal was to create awareness. And man, that was the only thing anyone was talking about for weeks. We're still talking about it. It's 4 years later. We're still talking about it. You want to talk about hitting a home run with trying to get your point across? All he was trying to do was create awareness. It was a peaceful, self-induced protest. And boy, did it catch on. And I'm going to ask Les some questions before I keep filibustering. I want to get back to Les Bowen. Hello, Les. How you doing, pal?
I'm fine, Joe. Sorry about all
No,
this.
That's all right. My question was, what emotions does that video bring out in you?
Yeah, I was just kind of sickened by it. I didn't understand. I was saying, you know, obviously I've never been a police officer, but I didn't... kneeling on the guy's neck for nearly 9 minutes, you didn't see him... you know, thrashing around or trying to get up or anything like that. What was the purpose? Why not just put him in handcuffs and,
which I think,
know,
he was. I think he was in handcuffs. And I don't get the purpose either. What do you need to kneel on his neck for? He's already on the ground face down.
It was so weird. The guy was, you know, he's sitting there with his hands
in his
pockets,
pocket,
kind of gazing off into the distance. Like,
right.
You know, like, it was one of the strangest things I've ever seen. At some point, I guess we're going to hear this police officer's explanation. I can't imagine there's one that makes any sense, but I just don't get it. And the three other guys standing around, didn't they want to go off and do something else at some point rather than watch this guy,
right,
you know, pin a man down by the neck for 9 minutes? I mean, the whole scene was surreal.
Bizarre. Just totally bizarre. Now, your article focused on, you know, Carson Wentz came out, and I read the tweet yesterday, and then Zach Ertz did the same thing, which is good. I like the fact that they did that. You did allude to the fact that Carson Wentz has never really taken sides on a controversial issue, and he certainly didn't 4 years ago either, and he didn't do it Monday either. He waited a few days, maybe, for whatever reason. I don't know. I'm not Carson Wentz, but, you know, the optics of it looked like, well, the riot started to develop, and then he came out and said something. But, again, never too late to do the right thing. He stepped up. He said some things. What did you think about his tweets and the fact that he was willing to take a side?
Yeah, the most remarkable thing about the tweet to me, Joe, was you could tell it was in Carson's words. You know, it wasn't something that a publicist or an agent, you know, typed up for him and he tweeted. You could see him kind of grappling with this. And I just thought it was notable in that he is the white quarterback from North Dakota who leads a very much predominantly black locker room. Mm-hmm. And I've never bought into the idea that there were huge problems with Carson Wentz's leadership,
right,
but I do think that's when you're in that situation, it's a factor in your dynamic, your conversation with your teammates. And I think it was good for him to sort of acknowledge that, really, for the first time. I think in the past he's been advised to steer clear of any controversy, to not be, you know, in any way a divisive figure, or you know, he just hasn't he's taken any sort of stance on anything that could be at all, you know, I'm not sure that in America right now in 2020 you can do that and lead black players, you know. I thought it was a good thing that he did. I wasn't surprised that he framed what he said in his religious beliefs. I think that's the heart of who he is in a lot of ways. I was glad he did it, and I think that nothing bad will come of it, certainly.
Do you think, and I think, to quote you, it was a big step. Do you think it was a big step in him being, you know, the captain, the leader of that locker room? And how much do you think it will actually help him with his teammates inside that locker room?
I think a lot, but it's really hard to say until they're actually together, and we don't know what all is going to happen here as we continue through this situation. But I definitely think I saw some tweets from teammates and ex-teammates who were very glad to see this and took it at face value. They didn't see it as anything, you know, cynical or trying to curry favor. I think they read it the way I did, that he was grappling with this. And, you know, I think it's a good thing. I don't know how much it will, if there are things that need to be changed, I'm not sure in the locker room how much this will really do it. I think you have to continue that conversation. But, you know, I think it's, I didn't see anything from anybody that thought this was, you know, not a great thing to do.
I agree. Again, never too late to do the right thing. And Carson Wentz spoke out. He was outspoken about the subject. We just had Tony Dungy on a little while ago, and he was asked a question. Does he think that athletes have a responsibility to speak out when things like this come up? You know, certainly, I mean, if he didn't believe in the cause, then I don't expect him to say anything. But if he does believe in a cause, I don't see why he wouldn't. Does he have a responsibility because he's got such a big pulpit and a big forum and a big audience to speak out on behalf of what's going on in America right now?
I guess he does. I can understand him not feeling that that's his wheelhouse. I don't think every player has to be like that. There are people who just don't have the words or the, you know, who aren't involved in things like that on an everyday basis. It just isn't part of their lives, and they don't need to force themselves to be someone they aren't. But if you're the leader of a team, again, in the NFL, I do think you have that responsibility, and I'm glad he's acknowledging it.
Yeah, I am too. I think that'll go a long way for him. Do you think that Carson Wentz will continue his plight, maybe his crusade, or is it a one and done? Because we had Marcus Hayes on, one of your colleagues, last night, and he said he wouldn't mind terribly, like, seeing some action out of some of these guys. You know, it's easy to put words on Twitter, but like Jalen Smith of the Celtics drove 15 hours to be part of a protest, and there's going to be rallies and protests in Philadelphia. Maybe, you know, Tobias Harris marched in a protest yesterday. Maybe, perhaps, he didn't demand it, but he said maybe perhaps seeing him be part of something like this. Now, I don't know if that's in Carson Wentz's, like you said, his wheelhouse, but does he need to do something like that to actually do, like Chris Long does? He donated all his $1 million a few a few years ago. Like, he does. He stood with Malcolm Jenkins. He made the shrine to Nick Foles. Would you like to see him be more of a doer?
Yeah, I guess I would. I don't know right now what form that would take. The protests at this point are becoming, you know, you know what happened in Philly last night, and it wasn't the result of the peaceful protests from the art museum yesterday afternoon, but I think, you know, I think you have to be real careful what you get involved in right now. But I do want to see him continue this, you know, wokeness or whatever you want to call it, going forward. I don't think he's in the area at the moment, you know, so that's one factor. But, yeah, I'd like to see, you know, he had the example of Malcolm Jenkins here for years. There was a downside to Malcolm for that, you know, for his advocacy over the years. There were a lot of people who were very affronted by his the way Malcolm tried to address racial healing. You know, if Carson becomes more outspoken on these issues and does join protests, I think there's going to be people who, you know, aren't happy about that. But it's not like Carson enjoys 100%. Unfiltered adulation anyway.
Yeah, true. That's true.
So, you know, I don't know if that's a big factor for him or not. This is kind of all developing as we go along here. I'm not sure I can really say what he ought to do going forward and what path he should take.
Well, it was a good start. Les, we always appreciate you coming on, pal. Thanks for hanging in there with us with the technical issues, and you have a great day, pal. We'll catch up with you soon.
You too, Joe. Good luck.
All right. Thank you, Les. Les Bowen of the Philadelphia Inquirer had a nice article. If you want to catch it, it's still up right now, along with Marcus Hayes' article on the similar subject. We talked to Marcus Hayes last night. Steve Callis coming up at 11:10. I'm Joe Stazak, and we will be hearing from Lewis Riddick of ESPN and Jalen Rose of ESPN, along with Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk as well. As the program continues, I'm here till noon on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
All right, we're back. 10:31 here at 97.5 The Fanatic. Don't forget, this weekend's programming is brought to you by BetRivers.com. Check out the all-in-one Game King video poker now at BetRivers.com. Sign up is easy, and you can get started with as little as $10. Have fun, and please bet within your limits. Presented by Rivers Casino Philadelphia. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. So we had Les on. We had to cut his time a little short because of the technical difficulties we had, but he gave his input. He believes, and the question of the day is, do you think the athletes, professional athletes, could be college athletes as well, but the pros really get the attention and have the biggest pulpits and microphones to speak out? And like Carson Wentz, that's being a leader to me. I only saw another tweet from one other Eagle. It was Zach Ertz. I could be wrong, but those are the only two I've seen. And those two are two of the leaders on the team. Carson Wentz is the leader of the team. You know, by definition, he's the quarterback. I do think they have a responsibility to speak out, especially for a situation like this one where it's going to take non-minority people to institute or to initiate change. It's going to have to come from everybody, not just minorities, because that could be looked as, oh, they're complaining again, blah, blah, blah. But if you have everyone complaining about it, maybe something will actually happen. Maybe something will actually happen. If it just changes the course of one situation or reaches one police officer, or one police officer doesn't pass the psychological test or gets fired because of his record, if some change has been implemented and it affects that in a positive way, even if it's just one police officer who loses his job, and I'm not calling for folks' job, but the bad eggs, yeah, get them, clean it up. Let's clear it up. Then it's worth it. And I think Carson Wentz, you know, also went a long way into, you know, helping himself and his status as a leader in the locker room. Because, again, and Les said it, he's, you know, he's from white America, North Dakota. Now he's leading a locker room of predominantly black men. And I think him speaking out on this subject will probably carry some weight with him and the boys. Now, ESPN has a show called Wake Up every morning at 8 o'clock. It's replayed until 10 o'clock. Lewis Riddick, who is one of their analysts on ESPN, he worked in the Eagles front office back in the day, played for the Browns, had a cup of coffee there. Also back in the day, Jalen Rose played for the Fab Five, played for the Pacers, is also an analyst on the show. He's those two guys are two key cogs for the show, and they were talking with Mike Greenberg about this subject, and we'll start with Lewis Reddick. Now, I left it a little long because I like what he had to say. Usually we cut the sound bites down a little bit, but we figured we'll let him run. So this one's about 2.5-3 minutes. This is Lou Riddick on the subject we've been talking about, the George Floyd subject.
There is no quick fix to this, but I think what you are seeing athletes doing by way of the stage that they have, by way of the platform that they have, is something that they need to continue to do. And again, it needs to be emphasized. It can't just be us minorities or African Americans. It has to be all people. And the white athletes who are now stepping up need to continue to step up and need to continue to voice the fact that this cannot be normalized. The kind of things that you're seeing on TV right now, as far as, you know, black men being killed in the streets, cannot be normalized. And in a sense, it is being normalized, because it is then just moved on, and then it's just on to whatever the next thing that is happening in society. And then, as far as, you know, really the important conversation surrounding how do you correct this, how do you then start to fix what is going on in our society. Look, Dwayne The Rock Johnson just said, you know, on his Instagram this morning, he said, how do you normalize equality? How do you have that become the narrative? How do you have that become what is pervasive in our society? And, you know, with sports, it's interesting. It's interesting. Like at this point in time, everybody wants sports to come back, as, you know, and have it be some kind of escape, some way to escape all the things that we see happening. When really, you know what sports is going to really do, and what sports many times does? It leads the way, because when you're talking about normalizing equality on the football field, you know, which is my arena, which is Dominique's arena, on the basketball court, which is Jalen's arena, equality is something that is normalized on those playing fields. Because look, we played next to people who are not minorities, who are not African American. We're all out there for a common goal and looking after each other and looking and kind of like having each other's back. How do we have that become something that becomes normalized in society overall? Because right now, and you know what, I don't know where that leadership is going to come from. I don't know where in society, where is that leadership going to come from? It shouldn't be sports' responsibility to do that. But maybe, you know, in essence, it is partly sports' responsibility, because no one else seems to be taking it up right now. Because right now, look, we know what the problems are, but we don't have a lot of solutions. And maybe sports is part of the solution, because we've kind of had the blueprint. We've kind of shown the blueprint as far as how people can work together and how equality can be normalized in a sense on the court and on the football field. Although there's work to do in that area too, when we're talking about minority hiring and all that, which is a whole different subject. But maybe sports does need to play a bigger role than just to have people escape. Because right now we are devoid of leadership. We are devoid of a path. We're devoid of a plan. And that is a very scary, scary thing, speaking from a black man's perspective. That is a very, very scary thing.
Yeah, he's right. And I love Lou Riddick, by the way. Every time he opens his mouth, I stop and listen to what he has to say. It's gospel to me. I think he's incredibly intelligent. He's always spot on. He speaks very well, and he knows what he's talking about. And initially he said he doesn't think it's sports' responsibility, if you listen to the soundbite. And then he said, but maybe it is, because no one else is stepping up. He's right. And athletes have the ear of the public. Sports is huge in this country. People listen. They listen when athletes speak up. They are looked upon as role models, as leaders, as celebrities, as deities, perhaps. They carry a lot of weight. They have a responsibility to throw that weight around when they have the opportunity to do so. At least I think they do. Otherwise, to me, you're being negligent by not doing anything. And you could say, well, how can you expect someone to do something if he doesn't want to create a stir, doesn't want to get last? Well, guess what? Toughen up. Colin Kaepernick did it. Yeah, it cost him his job. It's not going to cost you your job, Carson Wentz, to come out and support the cause. I'm not even just talking about this cause. I'm talking about any kind of cause like this one, although this is unique in of itself. But I think it's great. I think it's great that he came out and said some things. You know, J.J. Watt, also a white player, defensive end for the Texans, Zach Ertz, had some things to say. called himself selfish for not doing it sooner because he couldn't figure out the right words to say. Just speak from the heart. That's all. Again, doesn't have to be perfect. He's a Stanford guy. He's a smart guy. We're going to have Julie ghostwrited for you. Whatever. And I thought he did himself well as well. Of course, people already look up to him. He's a locker room favorite, is Zach Ertz. I think people respect Carson Wentz, too. He has taken some bullets. We know the Joe Santaliquito story that came out maybe a year and a half ago. He's not immune to bullets. And I've fired some my way at Carson Wentz as well. I'm lauding him for what he did the other night. Never too late to do the right thing. I'm disappointed and was disappointed he didn't do it earlier. But he's doing it, and hopefully it will continue. We're going to hear from Jalen Rose on the other side, also from Wake Up, from the Mothership ESPN. And we'll hear what he has to say, and Mike Florio will follow at some point. We also have a little bit of James Van Riemsdyk. Caught Mike Tirico interviewing him as well, and he talked about the safety of coming back and how he feels about it, and if we can get into some NHL a little bit later on in the program, we'll certainly do that. I'm Joe Stajak here till noon on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
All right, welcome back to the show, 10:46. Connor, what's up with the bump music? We the last couple weekends we had like decent bump music. It sounds like we're back to the norm, which is not good.
Yeah, so we were doing that summer music, which was awesome. I like doing that. They must have
they got rid
that
of it
out.
So
yeah,
you have no control over it. It's just what's logged in the queue.
Yeah, it's what's in there. So I just have to let it run. Unfortunately,
travesty.
But I'm a country guy.
What a
so
travesty.
If it was up to me.
You country music?
I am country music.
Get out of here.
Oh, yeah. You don't like country?
Some I do, but I'm surprised. I never pictured you to be a country guy. How is that possible?
Yeah, you know, I never was. And then I went to school in middle of nowhere, Maryland in college. And okay. I played baseball. So you play baseball in middle of nowhere, Maryland. All you're going to hear when you're warming up and doing anything, our batting practice playlist, it was all country music.
And you got into it, so you weren't socialized with it from when you were a baby. You got into it in college by listening to it a lot?
Yeah, like people listened to it around me. I grew up in South Jersey, so it was around. But
so do you like anyone in particular? I don't even know who's singing these days.
I mean, there's so many. I'm so into country music. It's my favorite type of music, and I'm a big music guy, so I listen all the time.
Okay, interesting. Think you know a guy. No, not a big country music guy. There are some songs that I do like. I like that. Names aren't good with me today. Big guy, big old, good old boy. He was on a Trump show, Who Wants to Be an Apprentice or whatever the hell it was called. Celebrity Apprentice he was on, and he won.
Yeah, Trace Adkins,
thank
right?
Thank you.
Yeah.
I like Trace Adkins.
Trace Adkins is great. That's a little bit before when I got into country music, because okay. I got into it in college, which was 2012 to 2016 for me.
Gotcha. So, and that was before?
Yeah. Trace was like late 90s, early 2000s. He was on The Apprentice. It must have been like 2008, 2009.
You're going to miss this. Isn't that one of his songs?
Great song.
Isn't that a great song?
Great song.
I didn't do it justice, but he's tremendous. And he won The Apprentice, too. He won. I think he won, as I recall, when he was on a Trump show. I don't know how long ago that was. If it was before you went to college, my goodness gracious. Can't believe that much time has gone by. Woo! Anyway, just switching gears just real quick. We could talk about the Roy Halladay situation. The documentary was fascinating, in my opinion, the other night. And we'll get back to George Floyd in just a second. But I thought it was fascinating just how many problems he had after he was done with baseball. I mean, he was formally diagnosed finally with ADD, depression, and anxiety. He probably didn't need a doctor to tell him that he had those things. Maybe the ADD. So they give him Adderall. They probably gave him an SSRI for depression and anxiety. It usually covers both. Here's what was found in his system. The toxicology report. This is from the toxicology report, because they did say they found him to be impaired. So he has Adderall in his system. No big deal. Like I said yesterday, I mean, I have enough in my system right now to jumpstart an L-1011. So no big deal. That doesn't impair you. And if anything, it wakes you up and makes you more alert and makes you more chatty, if you will. He also had morphine in his system. I don't know how he scored morphine. Apparently, he got, because he was addicted to painkillers and opioids, and he got them through one of his local pharmacists that he would pay cash for. Like in other words, like go behind the counter and give the guy cash. Nice to have friends like that in the biz. But and he went in 2011. Remember, he had the back injury. He started taking painkillers then. He had to fight through. Remember the NLDS against the Cardinals game 5, a 1-0 victory over Chris Carpenter? He struggled all through that game. The fact he only gave up one run, I had no idea he was injured. 2012, so he doesn't go into rehab. When did he go into rehab? In 2013. So he was taking painkillers in 2011. 2012. You remember his last 20 games in 2012 where he couldn't find the strike zone, and it was actually almost comical, some of what he was doing on the mound. So he goes into rehab in 2013, but he quits because someone snuck in a camera and noticed him, and he was deathly afraid of being outed. So he quits. His weight fluctuated anywhere from 205 pounds to 300 pounds. All right, he would go up, he would go down, his health was not good, he was drinking. He re-entered rehab in 2015. I think that's when he was formally diagnosed with ADD, depression, and anxiety. But the toxicology report came back. He had Adderall in his system, morphine in his system, and something called Zolpidem. Zolpidem. I know exactly what that is. I've actually taken it. It helps you sleep, and it contains Ambien. I don't take it anymore. I mean, back in the day, whenever, but I can't sleep. So it was actually very helpful. Why is he taking that when he's taking his plane out for a spin? That you don't take Ambien during the day. You take it at night to help you sleep. And it has different, like the short release contains Ambien, Internez, and Edwar, which basically, I mean, one, like, if you wake up, puts you back to sleep. The other puts you to sleep right away. And the other thing that's released in the short-acting form of the Ambien or the Zolpidem keeps you asleep. And then there's the extended Ambien, Zolpidem, and it's basically Ambien CR. So, you know, Ambien, if anyone's taken Ambien, and I have, it does some weird things to you. You can get a good night's sleep, but if you can't fall asleep even on Ambien, you might start seeing some things. No kidding. I used to see things. I used to see posters and pictures in 3D. Ambien, that's what it would do to my eyes. So I don't know what it did to Roy Halladay. I don't know why he was taking it, but that was in his system, along with morphine. I don't know where he's getting morphine, but along with Adderall, which to me, you know, cross off Adderall, big deal. Morphine, painkiller, okay. Zolpidem, I don't see anything about an antidepressant. Apparently, his wife, Brandy, said he used to have bouts of depression, didn't know what to do after baseball until he started coaching his kids' team. They went 30-0. He really liked that. That kind of got him back on track. Flying was very therapeutic to him, but he was an adrenaline junkie, and he got that Loon A5, that plane. If you watch the documentary, cool-looking plane. Really cool-looking plane. He equated it to like an F-15 or a MiG-28. He said he felt like a fighter pilot in it, and that would concern. Like, his dad was like, you got to be careful, man, because he kept talking about the maneuverability of it, how he can do some things in it. They showed the bridge he flew under. He flew under that bridge. It's like a big suspension bridge. I don't know where exactly it was or what the name of the bridge is, but he flew under it with his wife in tow. You know, he took some chances. And apparently the NTSB report basically stated that he was doing extreme acrobatics. So that wasn't just speculation or a rogue witness. That actually is in the NTSB report, that he was doing extreme acrobatics on Ambien. Unfortunately, didn't work out. He lost control of the plane, apparently. Very unfortunate. He was on his way to take the plane back to the airport, and then he was going to meet his wife there, and then he had something to do the rest of the day. He ends up sending her a text apologizing. He should have gone with her instead of taking the plane out for a spin. And instead of heading north to the airport, he hung a left out over the Gulf of Mexico, and that's where he was. Again, the flight only lasted 17 minutes. But you never know. You never know what's going on behind the scenes. He was afraid to fail. He was such a perfectionist. You know how that is a form of OCD, and it is so exhausting. Believe me, I've had bouts with it, of trying to be perfect all the time. And when you're not, you spiral into an abyss of depression. But trying to keep up that level of perfection, and especially him with his workouts and his programs and the way he pitched and the way he detailed his work, it's exhausting. And his wife said he felt that he could never make mistakes, unfortunately. So that's kind of, which was one of his problems. He obviously needed meds. He needed some psychological help. He was seeing a psychiatrist once he was diagnosed in 2015. So it was a fascinating 1 hour. I wanted to see more. I wanted to see a lot more. You know, I didn't need to see, you know, The Last Dance 10 hours of it, but it was pretty fascinating. I thought his wife did a great job walking us through the whole thing. His dad was very composed. Sister teared up a little bit. I don't know how they stayed that composed, but I thought it was just wild, because when Doc was here, Doc was a straight shooter, didn't say a whole lot, never smiled a whole lot. Once in a while, when it was appropriate, went about his business, showed up early. Kyle Kendrick was basically his apprentice, his minion, that he was teaching how to train and how to be a professional and how to be a big pro league pitcher and whatnot. And he just, it's wild having no idea what was going on in Doc's head at the time. And then, of course, it got worse once he retired, because he had nothing to really do. He had no outlet anymore. 20 years he's been playing baseball, being a big-time pitcher, Hall of Famer. And a lot of times that happens to pro athletes. They fall into a deep, dark depression when it's over, when the party's over. Unfortunately, it manifested itself into, you know, taking various painkillers and drugs. I don't know if the Zolpidem directly caused him to be impaired, where he misjudged something or lost control because of it. But it certainly, if you connected the dots, you know, I wouldn't exactly have a problem with it and say you're summarily wrong about that, because it's quite possible that that was the case, unfortunately. 610-632-0975. Steve Kyle is coming up at 11:10. If you want to chime in on Roy Halladay, please do. Your thoughts on Roy Halladay. Has your opinion changed at all after watching that piece? Mine hasn't. He's human. He went through some things. I'll tell you more about what I know about his addiction to painkillers and some things along those lines on the other side. And we'll also get back to the George Floyd talk. And we're going to hear from Jalen Rose again on the other side, along with Steve Callis at 11:10. I'm Joe Stasiak here till noon.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.